LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement.
Democrat Minority Leader Chuck Schumer goes on a rant against Fox News executives to shut Tucker Carlson down. We'll find out why and hear Russell Brandt speak truth to media power, plus Ron DeSantis on Black history and more, all right now on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising with Scott Cosenza.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price.
Nobody is above the law, not the President of the United States and not the Attorney General.
When we were in high school, I'd take you behind the gym and beat the hell out of them.
His Twitter account should be suspended and should probably be taken from him.
How dare you, sniveling little, maniac, tell us how we're going to use pronouns. Go take a hike.
John McAfee does an interview with anybody, regardless of who you are, where you are, audience size, it doesn't matter.
John McAfee, welcome to The Uprising. Welcome back to The Uprising, podcast of LibertyNation.com. I'm your host, Scott Cosenza, and joining me today is Timothy Altingdonner, LibertyNation.com senior political analyst. Tim, welcome back to the program.
Hello, Scott.
I am ultra-caffeinated, I feel like, on this Thursday morning of March the 9th. We'll see how that works out.
I'm never ultra-caffeinated. I never get much beyond sufficiently caffeinated. Yeah. That way I have an excuse if I appear to be half asleep.
Some weeks, you know, it's a struggle to say, like, what clips should we include? And sometimes it's a trouble to even find a clip. But then some weeks, boy, it is an embarrassment of riches. And that's what we have before us today. I think I've winnowed things down, but we're going to talk about the Chuck Schumer and QAnon shaman and some other topics there. But first, let's talk about the Supreme Court, which has no clips because they just don't do the sexy media.
Because that's who they are. Yeah.
Right. But there were two cases that made a little bit of news this week at the court. Well, one that made news and one that I think should be making news. And so the one that made news was that they declined, Tim, to hear this this case, an Establishment Clause case. So a couple of atheists sued the city of Ocala, Florida, because the police chief there and some other city leaders hosted a prayer vigil in the wake of a mass shooting. And the atheists went to the prayer vigil. They knew it was a prayer vigil before they went, right? So it wasn't like they were surprised at a city council meeting with a prayer vigil and said, this right. is a violation of the Establishment Clause. No, that's not what happened. They saw it was a prayer vigil, attended the prayer vigil, and then said, this was a violation of the Establishment Clause and our offense. We're offended at these city employees and leaders hosting and participating in this prayer vigil. That's the damage that gives us the right to sue for the Establishment Clause violation. The city of Ocala, Florida says, we shouldn't have to defend this case. So we're going to sue what's called an interlocutory appeal, which is that we're going to put the main case on hold and we're going to appeal this particular aspect of it. And the aspect of it is Ocala says we shouldn't have to defend this case at all. It's not a First Amendment violation and they didn't suffer any damages. The Supreme Court ruled this week, it went all the way to the Supreme Court, that appeal. And the Supreme Court ruled this week that essentially the city does have to defend itself and explain in court why it wasn't a Establishment Clause violation, which is, of course, an expensive endeavor to undertake, which is why they went through the whole appeal to the Supreme Court in the first place. So Justice Thomas and Justice Gorsuch both wrote, well, Thomas wrote in dissent, and Gorsuch sort of wrote an explainer of why they thought the court should take this case. And it's because they don't think that just because you suffer a psychological perturbation or you're damaged that way, that doesn't give rise
to does that happen to those atheists? Do they have a nervous breakdown every time they drive by a church?
Now, Tim, as an atheist, I have to stand up for it's not even a tribe.
Ready for this? Here we go. You know, give me your best defense counselor,
Pendulette, who was Pendulette, the
comedian,
the louder half of the Penn and Teller group, was once asked, you know, to go to some atheist meeting, and he said, "You know, the best part about being an atheist is that you don't have to go to any meetings." You know.
That's right.
So it's not like atheists are a group, but.
Oh, you got me there. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I think that does make this case, I don't know that I side with the atheists in this case or not. I tend to think that I do. And the reason why is because the prayer vigil was hosted by the city. It wasn't a police officer or a mayor or somebody who attended a prayer vigil that the community was hosting, that members of the community were hosting. It was the police officers or the city government themselves who were hosting it. And, is that an establishment of a religion that, you know, is prohibited by the Constitution? Well, it's colorably close, I think. Now, the question of the damage.
Let me ask you something.
Sure.
Okay, because, prayer, a prayer is not necessarily Christian or Jewish or Hindu or Buddhist or Muslim.
Talk about the word ecumenical for 2 seconds, if you know what that means.
Right. So, ecumenical prayers are sort of just recognize the existence of God.
It's a generic theistic prayer, right? It's the kind of prayer you would make if you were a public official talking to a big group.
Yes. I mean, it's anything that's sort of vaguely theistic, shall we say.
Yeah.
And that can be in several different contexts, depending on, you know, what your faith is. But I mean, here's the thing. To me, if there were only Christian prayers permitted at a prayer vigil, then I would say, okay, hosted by the city, then I would say you've really got a First Amendment violation. But the fact of a prayer vigil, did it say Christian prayer vigil? I'm sure it didn't. Did it say Jewish prayer vigil? I'm even more certain didn't say that. So it's the fact of prayer itself is that a First Amendment establishment violation? Now, I mean, I don't see it.
You and I have been to together I don't know how many public meetings when you were running for the U.S. Senate from Virginia. And we've heard some prayers in some of those instances that were not ecumenical at all, but were a call to faith and to worship Jesus Christ. And I think if I were, well, I know so because I'm not a Christian, but especially if I were a devout Muslim or Jewish person or any other faith that wasn't a Christian faith, and perhaps even some Christian faiths, to hear that from a government officer let me pose the question to you. So,
okay,
while you're right, I don't believe that there was any advertisement that said come to this Christian prayer vigil or any other denomination or faith prayer vigil. Let's say that's just what they did. In other words, they didn't advertise it that way, but the attendees. Or rather, not the attendees, but the presenters only offered Christian prayers or only offered Hebrew prayers or only offered Muslim prayers. Does that change your analysis that even though they didn't advertise it as a Christian prayer vigil, if they did this, you know, let's say they did it regularly and only prayed to Jesus Christ, does that make it more of an Establishment Clause issue for you?
Well, it depends on how the vigil is set up. A prayer vigil to me says anybody who is there is free to offer a prayer for whoever the vigil is pointed towards, whoever it benefits. So, you know, to me, if you're there and you could be, you know, a Muslim who is a friend of the whoever it was that they were praying for, if you were then prevented from offering a prayer to Allah instead of Christ, then again, you'd have a case. I think it's pretty obvious that it's it's pretty much a Christian thing that they did. But at the same time, you've got to consider that a majority of the nation, a solid majority of the nation, is Christian. Now, does that mean that we should
establish? That has no bearing on our...
But let me just say this. It's a cultural question, okay? That, okay,
well,
remember...
By the way, I am culturally a Christian, so I'm well suited to answer this on either
that's
side.
That's true, you are, because you're surrounded surrounded by Christians, whether you like it or not. True. But I remember when we visited Morocco on a business trip, and very interesting shot of video of, as it turns out, though it's neither here nor there, a documentary on the travels of Winston Churchill. And one of the places he went was to Marrakesh in Morocco. And I remember being awakened to the call to prayer.
Yeah.
In the distance, which happens five times a day, you must bow towards Mecca. Okay. So do I, as a Christian, go downstairs and say, I object to the fact that I'm a Christian and I have to listen to that call for prayer? No, because that's substantially what the culture is in that country. So same thing when we went to Israel, it's all Jewish all the time. Do I object to that? No, that's the culture there, right? Likewise, here, the culture runs heavily Christian.
But we're better than those places because we have the anti-establishment clause, because we have the First Amendment, right? Isn't it better to live in a society where you don't have to be of the dominant?
Absolutely.
Culture? Okay.
Oh, no, I support, I'm an un... you know,
right, the rights of the minority is what this whole, it's funny, because
undiluted supporter.
You and I are the most anti-woke people around, probably, but really that's what the whole about the United States is that it's about the minority of one, right? We get to have our independent thoughts.
Well, it's true, and, but let's also put it into full historical context, the Establishment Clause, Scott, because remember that the colonies, each and later states, each designated an official state religion.
Did every single one? I know that many of them did. Did every single one?
It may not have been one or two of them.
Okay,
but
so like Maryland was Catholic, right? Or
Maryland was Catholic. Yeah. Pennsylvania was Quaker.
Yeah.
New England was largely Anglican. And the Establishment Clause was really almost more not to play a denominational favorites, right, by saying we're going to, Quaker's going to be our national religion or Anglican. So yes, they did not want to allow prejudice against a person because of their religious beliefs. That was part of it. But the other part was to say, hey, you Quakers, Episcopals, Catholics, you're not going to get to be the national religion because we're not going to have one. And that was also a very practical way to settle the denominational differences between the states.
I think that this type of litigation is good, even if it runs into, you know, well-meaning city officials who didn't wish to establish a religion, but just honor the fallen of their community and try to help give succor to the people. And the reason why, I just want to get this point out, which is the reason why, is anytime government officials who are on the taxpayer's dime use the people's money to further a religious notion, I want them to have a second and third thought and think, is this okay? Does the Constitution allow us to spend taxpayer money to advance this religious principle? And that is one of the things that, you know.
Well, then it expands into when you talk about school choice. Should public money that's designated for education be able to be used for a child to carry that allotment with them to a Catholic school or a Christian school, for example. We're going to talk about all the reasons
why public school is an abomination in the first place, and we should spend no money on that. But we're going to leave that for another day, and we're going to jump ahead to the second case that I think we want to talk about from the Supreme Court. And almost nobody's talking about this because it's a little early. This is a case that is up for cert at the Supreme Court. So one of the plaintiffs lost at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, and they're petitioning for the Supreme Court to take the case. And it's a case, NRA versus Vulo is the name of the case. And I'm assuming, Tim, you're thinking that this is a Second Amendment case, but it's not a Second Amendment case. It's a First Amendment case, the rare NRA titled First Amendment case. And basically, this is one of those, when something happens, a lot of times you think, how can they do that? That seems outrageous. And then some years later, you'll read about the court case from years prior. It's just taken a while to kind of bubble up. And that's what we've got here. When the state of New York, from Governor Cuomo on down, declared a full court press or war on the NRA, one of the ways that they did that was they attacked their partners. So the NRA, like so many of these big groups like the AARP or whatever, I'm sure you get the I'm not making a comment about your age, but I'm sure you get the solicitations for like, join.
I love that. I'm not going to comment about your advancing age.
No, but it's like,
I'm not going to bring up that you committed that crime.
Did you know
4 years
ago? Whole life policy for only $12.99 per whatever insured. Like, you know, no physical, no questions asked.
Just this one weird trick.
Yeah. So, you know, they make a lot of dough off of that, right? You buy your auto insurance from their marketing partner or whatever, and right. You know, they get a cut of it. And selling their lists to marketers. And basically, this woman, Maria T. Vulo, was the head of the New York State Department of Financial Services. And what she did was she called the NRA's insurance company partners and said, hey, listen, you know, see, you're in business with this NRA group over here. They're not the best kind of people. You might want
to. I'd hate to see your business suffer.
I see that your license to sell insurance comes up for renewal in 2 years. Yeah. I hate to see a bad mark on that application.
Process get elongated and complicated. Yeah.
I can tell you that typically we don't enjoy NRA partners for renewal. So that's what she did. She threatened in a way that has never been done to non-NRA. So it's like their defense is, well, hey, the NRA was violating New York State regulations or something like that. And the defense to that claim for the NRA is, it's sort of like this driving, you know, I've said to you before, like if I drive 56 miles an hour in a 55 mile an hour zone and the cops pull me over and write a ticket, that's okay. But if I'm the only one they've ever given a ticket to for doing 56, and it's because I have a Trump bumper sticker or a Biden bumper sticker, that's not about the speeding, right? It's about my First Amendment free speech with the bumper sticker. Same idea.
That's why you always put on a libertarian bumper sticker. No,
yeah.
You won't get snagged for it.
That'll just confuse people, sadly, I'm sure.
Right. That's the point, isn't it?
So the NRA is saying that you attacked us for our free speech, and that's the reason why. And I think that the Supreme Court might take this case. And I think it's going to be a really big deal if they do. We're going to see amicus briefs from basically every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there who's terrified that, you know, their own administrator judgments could come under question. Because I think this happens a great deal out there in the country where, you know, we talk about it all the time, especially in these attorneys general's offices, like Letitia James, for instance. And it happens on the right as well. I don't mean to suggest it's only a left-wing thing where they go after, you know, groups that they don't like because of their speech. So the NRA got a win from the Supreme Court. They're allowed to submit their pleadings under seal. And I assume that means that they want to conceal the financial details that why they say they're injured, right? Like, we made X amount of dollars 1 year and not in the next.
Right. And it's associated with this intervention.
And the Supreme Court granted that request, but we're still waiting to see if they'll grant the cert petition. But it's a big case with the potential. So anyway, we're tracking that. But let's go ahead and shift gears here. You know, I was talking to somebody, I won't mention their name this week. And Tim, I have discovered, maybe others have too, I'm not suggesting I'm the first one, but there is a virulent new strain of Trump derangement syndrome that's sweeping the nation. And there are a number of sub-variants of it. One of them is the DeSantisitis, which is that you just believe whatever the like most outlandish Twitter version of the truth about Ron DeSantis is. And this especially concerns the Don't Say Gay bill, which wasn't Don't Say Gay. I wrote about it for the sponsor of today's podcast, LibertyNation.com, to people's choice for conservatarian news and analysis 24/7. And the other is the issue with the black curriculum. Like, and the person I was talking to said, was talking to me like I was like an idiot. And they were like, how can you think that they shouldn't teach about slavery or, you know, the history of blacks in America? Like that's what Ron DeSantis is arguing for. And it's absolutely not. And before you comment on it, you're coming from Florida, I will say, from Studio Florida today. Let's go ahead and listen to the governor and almost certainly candidate for president of the United States.
You've also heard some things about the ability or the availability of African American history in Florida. And this grew out of, there was a proposed course that the College Board was sending to different states. It hadn't even been approved yet. And they were soliciting feedback, so it was still in the experimental stages. But our Department of Education said, this is rejected. It clearly goes against our standards about opposing ideological indoctrination. And so we identified the reasons why. So you just tell me whether you think this is something that is appropriate for an African-American history course. So this is, they had a thing about queer studies, right? They put that in this course. And this is the quote from one of the readings there, quote, "We have to encourage and develop practices whereby queerness isn't surrender to the status quo of race, class, gender, and sexuality. It means building forms of queerness that reject the given realities of the government and the market." And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, why aren't we talking about Frederick Douglass? You know, why aren't we talking about things that I think can really matter? And so you had a whole bunch of other things. A lot of this was informed by, you know, I would say neo-Marxism, heavy, heavy ideological bent. And so that clearly is not something, you know, that we're going to do. But what they would say then is because this ideologically driven course was not something that met our standards, that somehow Florida prohibited teaching anything about black history. And that is not only not true, Florida law does the opposite. We require that. All the aspects from the colonies all the way to the present. And in fact, since I've been governor, we've expanded that. We did the 1920 Election Day riots. We now have that as being something that has to be discussed, as well as the impact of Jim Crow laws. And so we did a law last year called the Stop Woke Act, Stop Wrongs Against Our Kids and Employees Act. And it was employment protections that if you go to work, that you don't have to sit through a discriminatory training. You have a right to opt out about that. We're litigating that. It will eventually win on appeal like we normally do. But then also K-12, you know, we're not going to.
Well, you know, this is a demonstration, Scott, of Governor DeSantis's political instincts, which are very sharp. He sees that the misrepresentation of his decisions had reached the point where he needed to respond. And he did it brilliantly by exposing, okay, so do you think this is appropriate for students to learn in a African-American studies course? See, the thing is, that kind of thing that he pointed out there is shocking to people, which means it neutralizes the people who say that don't say gay, as if it's just a big homophobic thing or it's a racist thing. But it's pretty obvious from that that the purpose of things like queer theory is to foment dissent at a young age, dissent against our very system of government and its systemic racism and all the other Black Lives Matter talking points, which are all incorporated into the current thinking about how to do African American studies. And he is standing as a bulwark against this kind of disgusting woke, and it's toxic because it teaches kids at such a young age.
Oh, listen, you've gone down a road that I didn't want to travel, which was your analysis of that, the substance of it. But what I wanted was a discussion of the politics of it. And what I mean by that,
well, that's what I said is political.
I think that it is. It's indicative of the capture of the news that the progressives and the leftists have, that they've really, I think, been relatively successful in brandishing, you know, DeSantis as some kind of, you know, he's actually more dangerous than Trump, Tim. That's
right. You knew that was going to be coming. One of these days, he's like Trump with a brain, right? So he's very dangerous kind of thing.
Yeah. Russell Brandt, the British, I guess, comedian, actor, whatever, commentator with his podcast, was making a media tour of the country this past week, and he did a couple appearances which I thought were great, and one of them was on the Bill Maher show, and he really, and he's a leftist, by the way, he's like a genuine socialist leftist, but he's an honest one, which we're happy to have the debate with, yes. You know.
Intellectual honesty is always welcome.
Yes. Unlike MSNBC host John Heilman, who he sparred with on the Maher show. And I think it's indicative of this thing I'm talking about with this strain of Trump derangement syndrome, which is that, and the teams are still there and they're coalescing around the January 6th stuff, but it's this team of, you know, you're on the Trump team or Trump affiliated team, or you're on the other side. And let's listen to Brand really send up Heilman.
John, I've not known you long, but I love you already. But I have to say that it's disingenuous to claim that the biases that are exhibited on Fox News are any different from the biases exhibited on MSNBC. It's difficult to suggest that these corporations operate as anything other than mouthpieces for their affiliate owners in BlackRock and Vanguard. And unless we start to embrace, and then also, mate, like just spiritually, if I may use that word in your great country, we have to take responsibility for our own perspective. I've been on that MSNBC, mate. It was propagandist nutcrackery I went on a show called Morning Joe. Yeah. It was absurd the way they carried
on. Morning Joe.
I don't know what it was. It wasn't morning. There was no one called Joe there. No one could concentrate. They didn't understand the basic tenets of journalism. No one was willing to stick up for genuine American heroes like Edward Snowden. No one was willing to talk about Julian Assange and what he suffered trying to bring real journalism to the American people. And I think to sit within the castle of MSNBC throwing rocks at Fox News is ludicrous.
My friend,
make MSNBC better. Make MSNBC great again.
My friend, I would. The moment the
quiet them on a territory you can win on, Joe.
Russell, darling, the moment that you give me a specific example. An actual example.
Okay, I'll give you one.
I'd like to hear a specific example, approval specific example of an MSNBC correspondent or anchor being on television saying something they knew was false, and we're saying behind the scenes to people, I'm about to go out, and we know that the election wasn't stolen,
or something equivalent, example.
But I will go out on television and say the opposite. I will lie.
My answer?
Give me the specific example.
I understand the basic point.
Give me a specific example.
All right.
Well, I'm with you. I think it's a false equivalency, Russell.
It's a total.
No, it's not.
It's not about bias. It's a false equivalency because you don't actually know anything about any of these organizations you're talking about. Even on MSNBC once. Big fucking deal.
My darling, it was more than enough.
You can't come up with
such a carry-on.
You don't have a single actual fact.
Do you want an example?
Yes.
The ludicrous, outrageous criticisms of Joe Rogan around ivermectin, deliberately referring to it as a horse medicine when they know it's an effective medicine.
Rachel Maddow turning up on the TV saying, if you take this vaccine,
you're not going to get it, when it hadn't been clinically trialed for transmission.
Non-responsive.
You have to.
So he just went on and said, it's non-responsive. It's non-responsive when Brandt is giving him the responsive example that he asked for, just one, about saying some stuff that he didn't know. And I love that, by the way, that, you know, it's Morning Joe. There was no Joe and it wasn't in the morning. I mean, it was just complete.
Well, here's the thing, though, Scott. The only thing I'll say is that guy, Russell Brandt, didn't point to the most obvious example of false narratives that are concocted by the media. 2 years of the Russia collusion hoax.
Well,
2 years,
presumably,
of blaring headlines.
Yeah,
Pulitzer prizes for a hoax, a complete hoax.
I think that while it's true that the story was a complete hoax, Tim, I think that a number of the MSNBC hosts sincerely believed that it was not a hoax, at least initially. And then probably,
I sincerely believed that they wanted it not to be a hoax.
Yeah, willful blindness to
that's not journalism.
Factors. No, but that's not even advocacy.
No, hold on
just a second. I agree with you 1,000%, but I want to focus on Heilman. So Heilman's question was What did they lie about that they knew was a lie? And the answer was the ivermectin thing they knew was a lie. And I think he had that on the brain because he did Rogan's podcast as well. And in a great unintentional transition moment here on the Uprising podcast and the podcast of LibertyNation.com, we've got a clip from that, his appearance on Rogan. And I think it demonstrates why Rogan is so dangerous and so is Brandt because of what they're willing to discuss. And if you hear something on that podcast that you think you may have heard before, you heard it right here on The Uprising because we preceded the Rogan podcast with some of this stuff.
All right.
What my issue is, I don't think they believe in that stuff. I don't think they care. I don't think that they are creating an agenda to advance the interests of vulnerable people. I think they are using it as a distraction and a veil in order to carry on with the same kind of corporate and financial interests that have always determined what the establishment is. And if there's one thing we can point to in our lifetime, it's that the liberal establishment has become co-opted by the same forces that traditionally we regarded the right to have been co-opted by: military-industrial complex, financial industry.
Yeah.
And there's palpable evidence for that. And in order to not acknowledge that transition's taken place, they're able to keep the cultural conversation going. We care about your right to express yourself and your identity. That's a way of not acknowledging we're just the same. We're pro-war.
Yeah.
And now when there's that war, you know, like Jimmy Dore and all those guys did that anti-war march in Washington or whatever, it's like 5,000 people go. Now, I don't know if that's because of the last few years and what the pandemic's done to people accumulating and gathering crowds, or whether people have lost the belief and faith that people have any can have any impact on politics anymore. There's just now this immersive sense of apathy, this, as you say, loss of trust in institutions and authority. But something extraordinary has happened when people that say that they're, you know, we're the peace and love party are the party that are advocating for war won't include some of the complex conditions that have led to this current crisis, which there's clearly a case for, like, you know, NATO's infringement on Russian territory, the 2014 coup. I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but like, it's extraordinary that those conversations don't happen.
Right.
It's like, actually, like that post-Trump and post-pandemic, everything sort of enters into that template. There are certain things you're not allowed to say now. If you sort of say, were Russia in any way provoked? Is there any legitimacy to this, to their military actions from their perspective? That's the same as saying, oh, I don't think you should take certain medications, or maybe masks aren't necessary. And people aren't, it doesn't seem that the culture is learning. It doesn't seem
that the as the evidence is evolving, that people are saying, oh, wow, look, the stuff you were being told 2 years ago now, the things you couldn't say online 2 or 3 years ago, now there's evidence for that. In fact, I've bought documentation in case the...
Well, you know, Scott, the best evidence of how both parties basically conspire to maintain the status quo at all costs is the reaction, and this will serve as something of a segue, is the reaction among not just Democrats, because you would expect it from Chuck Schumer and everybody on the left, but from Republicans to Tucker Carlson daring to show footage that was suppressed from the public for, what is it, more than 2 years now. And he dares to show it and to basically stick a knife right through the heart of the narrative that this was a bloody insurrection and uprising against the government generally by all the people that entered in there. The fact that Mitch McConnell and some other Republicans, but McConnell himself, and I'm writing about this for LibertyNation.com, and the piece would have gone up right now, except that McConnell had a spill and went to the hospital, so we didn't think it was right to run a critical piece yet. But the fact that he stood there using a prop to defend the establishment position on January 6th, basically saying that Tucker Carlson should be censored from providing the footage that came directly from the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. I think that is the best evidence of a uniparty that cares only about maintaining its power and undergirding this narrative that only the establishment can be trusted with the future of the country. And now we've seen a fundamental lie about January 6th. And so the credibility of the federal government, which was already rock bottom.
Tim, you said that Mitch McConnell and get well soon, of course, to Darth Vader there, basically said that
I prefer the description of Grim Reaper.
Grim Reaper.
That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
Let's get away from the from that for a second. You said that he said that Tucker should be shut down. Now I have a clip here we're going to play in a moment.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, he didn't say that specifically.
Okay,
but he said Fox. I can give you the exact quote if you want. But he made a point. Look, here's the point. Mitch McConnell doesn't make many public statements. He's the opposite of Schumer. Schumer will run to the cameras whenever they're there.
By the way,
which is fine. He's a politician.
Do not get between Chuck
a camera. Exactly. And that's fine. He's a politician. Lindsey Graham is the same way. Okay. But McConnell chooses his spots very carefully. He doesn't go out.
So you're saying the fact that he used his voice, which he doesn't use often to talk about this, is demonstrative. And I get that.
Yes.
The Schumer statement was outrageous is the only word that I can use to describe it.
Well, you're not in favor of censorship.
Com editor-in-chief Lisa K. Donner wrote about Mr. Yes. Schumer's expurgations on the in the well of the Senate. Which,
oh, great word, expurgations. You
know, I put together this clip. Now, the full clip, I think, is like 12 minutes long. I cut it in places for length. This is only a couple minutes, a couple, maybe 3 minutes, to get the sense of what Schumer went off about, but I encourage everybody to find the full clip. I could justify playing it for everybody, I would love to play the whole thing, but this is him, and the denouement is him yelling at Fox News management to shut up their host who's putting out stuff he doesn't like.
Fox News host Tucker Carlson ran a lengthy segment last night arguing the January 6th Capitol attack was not a violent insurrection. By diving deep into the waters of conspiracy and cherry picking from thousands of hours of security footage, Mr. Carlson told the bold-faced lie that the Capitol attack, which we all saw with our own eyes, at one point, I was within 30 feet of the rioters. One of them, I was told, shouted out, "Let's get him," before my detail pulled me away and we ran in the other direction. To say January 6th was not violent is a lie pure and simple. And Speaker McCarthy is every bit as culpable as Mr. Carlson. Speaker McCarthy's decision to share security footage with Fox looked like a mistake from the very beginning, but after last night, it looks like a disaster. Speaker McCarthy has played a treacherous game by catering to the hard right. He's enabled the big lie and has further eroded away at our precious democracy. When people don't believe elections are on the level, that's the beginning of the end of this bold experiment in democracy that has gone on for more than 200 years. I hope every member of this chamber will call out Fox and Mr. Carlson for defending the insurrectionists. And again, I am disappointed and angered in Speaker McCarthy's decision to share sensitive security footage with Mr. Carlson. Speaker McCarthy was here that day. He knows what actually happened. His staff and members suffered like everyone else, but he chose cheap political expediency over truth and preservation of democracy. I condemn Mr. Carlson for siding with the enemies of democracy. I strongly condemn Speaker McCarthy's actions and fiercely oppose his decision to share this footage with Carlson. I urge Fox News to order Carlson to cease propagating the big lie on his network and to level with their viewers about the truth behind the efforts to mislead the public. Conduct like theirs is just asking for another January 6th to happen.
God, the biggest mistake that it turns out the left made in advancing this narrative about an attempt to basically overthrow the government and insurrection was that they chose to make the QAnon shaman, the guy with the Viking hat and all the headdress, the whole thing.
The fur.
To make him the face of the insurrection. And they pretty much used that expression. He is the focus. He's the centerpiece. He's the leader of the insurrection. So they put all that out there. And no wonder they were apoplectic when Tucker Carlson showed what the QAnon shaman really was doing that day.
And I met the QAnon shaman in passing on the streets of the Capitol as I was reporting for LibertyNation.com from the National Capitol area on January 6th. Again, for the record, for the authorities, I was not in the building. I didn't approach the curtilage of the building. I was couple hundred yards away when the violence went on. And Tucker Carlson led his report about January 6th and the QAnon shaman by saying and playing the violent footage of what happened that day, and talked about that violence and said, "This is all you have seen." And so I just want to make clear that Tucker Carlson has not said that there was no violence on January 6th, or that there wasn't a lot of violence on January 6th. He just said that it's not all violence on January 6th. And in particular, like you say, they made this person the poster child of this. It was almost, you'd think that the guy had an AK-47 or an AR-15, their favorite, you know, boogeyman gun, and was somehow mowing people down or invading. And it is just the opposite of the truth. Let's go ahead and play Tucker now.
The first thing you notice from viewing the full video record of January 6th is just how many people entered the Capitol building that day. Hundreds and hundreds of people, possibly thousands, over the course of about 2 hours. The crowd was enormous. A small percentage of them were hooligans. They committed vandalism. You've seen their pictures again and again. But the overwhelming majority weren't. They were peaceful. They were orderly and meek. These were not insurrectionists. They were sightseers. Footage from inside the Capitol overturns the story you've heard about January 6th. Protesters queue up in neat little lines. They give each other tours outside the speaker's office. They take cheerful selfies and they smile. They're not destroying the Capitol. They obviously revere the Capitol. They're there because they believe the election was stolen from them. They believe in the system. Here's the man you've heard referred to as the QAnon shaman outside the Senate chamber. These are not rioters. These are people who wandered over from a political rally.
We will not let them silence your voices.
After the rally, they walked down Pennsylvania Avenue, where organizers had secured a federal permit to hold a legal rally on the grounds of the Capitol.
I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard.
Once at the Capitol building, things began to get chaotic. Capitol police officers fired tear gas into the crowd. A few at the front of the herd broke windows. Someone opened the doors, and many hundreds of others just walked in.
We're gonna make that the story.
Of course, they did make it the story. And at the center of it, the single most famous person arrested that day was a Navy veteran from Arizona called Jacob Chansley, often referred to as the QAnon shaman. Jacob Chansley became the face of January 6th, a dangerous conspiracy theorist dressed in outlandish costume who led the violent insurrection to overthrow American democracy. For these crimes, Chansley was sentenced to nearly 4 years in prison, far more time than many violent criminals now receive. What did Jacob Chansley do to receive this punishment? To this day, there is dispute over how Chansley got into the Capitol building. But according to our review of the internal surveillance video, it is very clear what happened once he got inside. Virtually every moment of his time inside the Capitol was caught on tape. The tapes show that Capitol Police never stopped Jacob Chansley. They helped him. They acted as his tour guides. Here's video of Chansley in the Senate chamber. Capitol Police officers take him to multiple entrances and even try to open locked doors for him. We counted at least 9 officers who were within touching distance of unarmed Jacob Chansley. Not one of them even tried to slow him down.
Where's the lie, Senator Schumer? Tim, the lie is that you don't believe your own lying eyes. Don't believe your, when you see, you know, and this doesn't mean that nobody.
Trust us. Right.
It doesn't mean that nobody committed a crime on January 6th. It just means that QAnon shaman. By the way, he's got a 4 year, I think it is, 41
three month. Three and a half year stretch. Three and a half,
41 month federal prison term.
His attorney was never provided the footage that Tucker Carlson had to defend the QAnon shaman.
They act
which
like,
is an outrageous like, violation.
Like this footage is a from inside a nuclear weapons facility, the way that the left has acted, right. Like the revelation. Yeah, we all know that there's security cameras everywhere in the halls of Congress. And to disclose this footage, you know, that alone, that apoplectic shock they have that this footage was released, and to Tucker Carlson of all people, who else is going to run it? Who else is going to care? That there's that saying of like, you know, you point one finger at me and you got three pointed back at you, right? And that's what's going on with Chuck Schumer. He's got one pointed at Tucker Carlson, but three back at him. The idea that the Tucker Carlson presentation is a lie of craftily snippeted footage, and you know,
right?
Are we supposed to forget that the Democrats established a committee of sycophants and non-Republican Republicans who weren't going to challenge their narrative and eschewed actual regular hearings in order to produce a made-for-TV special about this? And that, to me, Sim, is why there's so much pushback here. It's about electoral politics and the crushing their narrative.
Of course it is. And this is, look, the real fear, the reason that the left is shaking in their boots, that all the footage has now been revealed, is that I think their whole plan was that if Trump wins the Republican nomination for the third straight time, they would just show January 6th footage in a loop. right. to scare people on off of ever voting for him. Now they can't do that now.
Yeah.
They can't do that now. And that's their biggest charge against Donald Trump. So the real winner in all this is Donald Trump, because it sticks a knife through the heart of the establishment narrative. Now, look,
I saw, I saw an interesting criticism from Trump from the right this week, which blasted him for essentially abandoning the January 6th folks. They said that they're, you know, his most loyal supporters, and he didn't lift a finger to help them. Is there any truth to that, do you think?
I don't know whether I can neither confirm nor deny, as lawyers yeah. like to say. I don't know. I know he has spoken on their behalf and has basically termed them as political prisoners.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's taken any specific action. But I think, you know, for the average American looking at this that isn't heavily partisan one way or the other, and was kind of horrified at what happened on January 6th, this provides the balance for them to see that there was violence, because they've seen that for 2 years replayed constantly. Now they see the other side. So I think the scenario isn't that hard to figure out when you see who has actually been prosecuted for actual violence per se. I think the narrative of what really happened is not that complicated. The combatants, the warriors, were from Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. They were the ones that became violent, that smashed the windows, that pushed open the doors. And then the Perhaps rest of the people.
Some of them, I'm sure. But let's not, even then, we can't even say that. I want to be clear.
Not all Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, but the ones, you can be pretty sure the ones who actually fomented violence were from those two groups. The rest of the people simply walked through open doors.
Hundreds of people, as I think the Tucker clip said, who walked into that building, who didn't smash anything.
They just walked through an open door.
Participating in a riot, but they were simply entering a building they had no permission to enter. I think, Tim, when I look at the QAnon footage, or QAnon shaman rather footage from Tucker, what my takeaway from it is that that man is serving 41 months in federal prison. So his life is, it's not ruined, but boy, what a really awful, you know, reality that he's facing for the next 41 months. The taxpayers have a gun to their head to have to pay to lock this guy up for the 41 months, which is not cheap, right?
And he's not the only one.
And meanwhile, we have so many instances of violence where people have deprived others of their civil rights, political violence. I'm talking about beating someone because they have a MAGA hat on, or ripping their sign because they support pro-life movements or something like that. And there's political violence on the right, but most of it seems to be from the left because it's tolerated. And the thing that I think is intolerable and cannot go on and will lead literally to a tearing of the country in a real way is you can't have QAnon shaman have to go away for 41 months, but you can burn down a federal courthouse every night in Portland for a year. And you get out on bail and nobody ever gets convicted of anything.
It's absolutely appalling. And the Democrats have never been held to account in the left for standing by and watching these cities burn because they thought it weakened Trump for the 2020 election. The neighborhoods, the people, the businesses that were destroyed by these violent Marxist demonstrators, rioters. Okay. They've never been held to account for that. And this was a single event on one day where the people were mostly peaceful. Okay. They were mostly peaceful, as opposed to I think it was something like 400 riots in the summer of 2020, which basically and nobody would do anything about. Trump wanted it. Turns out Trump considered sending in the military. That's how bad it was. And he was advised he couldn't do that and shouldn't do that. But the reason he did was because Democrats across the country refused to do anything to talk down the BLM inspired rioters, the cultural Marxists that are trying to overturn the entire foundations of the country.
For their allies, grace, and for their opponents, justice, Tim. That's that's their motto. And I'm still waiting for one of these jokers, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, I don't care, to investigate the real villains on that day, Tim. The management and staff of the JW Marriott, who treated me and the other Liberty Nation staff.
This is an underreported story, Scott. Underreported story.
I'm not angry about it anymore, but I do want justice, Tim. And on that note, we will let you get out of here. I know you've got a heart out, as we say in the
biz. Industry.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Uprising, and we will see you next week.
See you next time. Thanks, Scott.
Bye.
Bye.
Entertaining, informative, and just plain fun. Watch Liberty Nation's The Conservative Five, produced by conservatives for conservatives. C5's The Left Free Zone, hosted by Liberty Nation's Lisa K. Donner, joined by a raucous, irreverent panel of authors, deconstructing leftist narratives, debating the hot topics, and remembering to laugh. Join the official conservative safe space.
You only did that to piss Jeff off.
Liberty Nation's The Conservative Five.
That's it for this edition of The Uprising. Remember to hit Liberty Nation News for original articles, LN Radio, and our signature television program, The Conservative Five. Just go to LibertyNation.com on your browser or hit Rumble, YouTube, or check out our Liberty Nation News Roku channel. I'm Scott Cosenza. Thanks for joining The Uprising. This program is a production of LibertyNation.com, where truth is making a comeback.